No one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. For in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Two men will be in the field, one will be taken, the other left. Two women will be grinding with a handmill, one will be taken, and the other left. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. But understand this. If the owner of the house had known at what time of night the thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would not have let his house be broken into. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them their food at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. Truly I tell you, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose that servant is wicked and says to himself, my master is staying away a long time. And he then begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with drunkards. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he is not aware of. He will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites, where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. The parable of the 10 virgins. At that time, the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish, and 5 were wise. The foolish ones took their lamps, but did not take any oil with them. The wise ones, however, took oil in jars along with their lamps. The bridegroom was a long time in coming, and they all became drowsy and fell asleep. At midnight, the cry rang out, here's the bridegroom, come out to meet him. Then all the virgins woke up and trimmed their lamps. The foolish ones said to the wise, give us some of your oil, our lamps are going out. No, they replied, there may not be enough for both us and you. Instead, go to those who sell oil and buy some for yourselves. But while they were on their way to buy the oil, the bridegroom arrived. The virgins who were ready went in with him to the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. Later, the others also came. Lord, Lord, they said, open the door for us. But he replied, truly I tell you, I don't know you. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know the day or the hour. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Thank you, Nicholas. Good morning, everybody. Good to see you this morning. Good to be here with you. one of my favourite subjects I want to talk about this morning. Not so much End Times Part 2, although that is very, very interesting, and we'll think about that a bit. But actually this morning, I'd like to think a bit about going on holiday. We'll get to the end times, don't worry. I would like you to think about the last time, if you were lucky enough, that you got to go on a holiday or a trip. Or maybe you're planning one, maybe for the summer. Any of us going to New Wine? That does count, honestly, counts as a holiday or a trip away. For the purposes I want to think about it this morning, not the most delightful part of going on holiday, but this has been a question that has plagued me ever since I was about 12 years old. When do you pack? When do you pack to go on holiday? I've got a friend who's just gone on an amazing trip, quite a long trip, six or eight weeks I think they're going away for, a long time. And she said to me, the packing was part of the holiday. We've been packing for months. We've been putting aside the things that we want to take on holiday in these very organised piles. And every time we go into that room where all of those things are, we get really excited about this trip that we're going on. And that it's really been a great part of going away. And I will confess out loud to all of you, I'm very jealous of that perspective because that would drive me nuts. Because I'm afraid I come to the other end of the spectrum. I don't think Simon's here today, but he will attest to this. That I do it all. If we're going early in the morning, 10 o'clock the night before maybe, you know, in this great design that we'll get a few hours sleep before we rush off to the airport. Esther's nodding at me there. I'm a kindred spirit. In the hope that we'll sort of get a few hours sleep and go off to the airport in the morning. If we're not flying or travelling to the afternoon, well, that morning's fine as far as I'm concerned. That's when the packing gets done. And both have their pros and cons, don't they? So when you pack for a holiday and you're packing months in advance, well, people who do that, do you have two of everything? Do you? I mean, two toothbrushes, I can sort of understand. But two favourite T-shirts? Two sets of comfy pyjamas, whatever it is that you take on. Do you really have two of everything? Or are you constantly going into this, wherever this lovely shrine to your next holiday is, and finding that favourite T-shirt that you thought, no, I won't need that until I go on, oh, actually, I'm going to so-and-so's party, and carefully pulling it out of all your lovely ironed clothing so that you don't wreck the organised pile. Can I just say the women are laughing and the men are looking at me quite blankly at the moment. But if you're like me and you pack 5 minutes before you leave for the airport, well, there's always the risk that you're going to forget something. And sometimes we do. Not major things. No holiday has been completely ruined. Well, apart from the driving license thing, which, what goes on tour stays on tour. But we forget things and maybe miss the flight. And our smalls are still in the wash and we're juggling around. And you know, I fall into that category. If you've got the answer, please do let me know. I'm not really joking on that. I would love to know the secret of packing well. As Phil says, we draw to the end of our journey, our trip, through Matthew's Gospel this morning. And it's all about preparation. Do we prepare months, years in advance and sit on the edge of our seat waiting for Jesus to return? Or do we do it all at the last minute? That's the question we're faced with this morning. Last week, we did End Times Part 1. And I suppose the main thing we were thinking about last week, have a listen if you weren't here, have a go on the website and find it. What will it be like when Jesus comes back? The whole Bible points to the fact that Jesus will return at some point. And that we talked about last week. What will it be like, we thought about last week? How will it be when Jesus returns? And today is End Times Part 2, which really must be very, very final indeed, the very, very end, because there isn't Part 3, you'll be glad to hear. And the stories we're thinking about this morning, apart from packing suitcases, are these. When will Jesus return? Will I be ready? Am I ready now? When will Jesus return? Am I ready? Or actually, am I going to miss the flight and my smalls are still in the wash? Will my spiritual, eternal suitcase be packed in time. And what are the answers? Well, I don't know what they're like, what you think they are, having read that passage this morning and how we live life, but they're these. When will Jesus return? We don't know. Am I ready? I hope so. So there we are, done. Let's all sit down and carry on. Lovely. It's not very easy for someone like me to stand up, ask a question, and then tell you that the answer is, I don't know. Actually, there's quite a pressure sometimes to say, this is the answer, this is exactly how it's going to be, and deliver it all neatly packaged to you to take away and mull over. But the truth of the answer to this question, when will Jesus return? We do not know. And that is good enough for me. And shall I tell you why it's good enough for me? Because Jesus doesn't know either. And if he doesn't need to know the answer to this question, I can be pretty sure that it's all right for me not to know the answer. And in actual fact, there might be good reasons why I don't know the answer. Why doesn't Jesus know the answer? He tells us that he doesn't. In verse 36, we just read it. No one knows about that day or that hour, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. Nor the Son, but only the Father. Perhaps it was so he could show us the example of not knowing this key piece of information, but still finding a way to live a balanced human life. Couldn't it be very easy for us to say, oh, well, Jesus knows exactly how it's all going to turn out, so he can live in that way because he knows all the answers, but he doesn't. He lives the perfect human life, even in this element of darkness, of not knowing that we do. So firstly, I think it just, for us, it's a good example that it is possible to live not knowing. But what it tells us is this, that whilst the Bible might give us hints and indications as to what will happen, in what order, all through the Bible there are talks of some fairly awful things, and that's what we talked about last week. It's going to be trouble ahead, I think. We were all singing in our heads last week as to what it's going to look like. The thing is this, we do not need to spend time second-guessing when this is going to be. Has anyone ever read the Left Behind series? Any of the Left Behind series? I have to say I have read the Left Behind series. It's quite good as a sort of page-turner on the train. These two men from America decided they would put forward a set of events of what it might look like in that whole journey through. If you look at Daniel in the Old Testament and Revelation in the New Testament, they tried to put together a series of events that it might look like when Jesus returns and the kingdom is here in its full, fully established way. As a work of fiction, if you like that sort of thing, it was quite interesting. But it is not fact. It is not given. And we are not called, whilst it's interesting to examine scripture, we are not called to know the details of this, of Jesus coming again. So if we don't know when it's all going to happen, how are we going to be ready? I know when to pack my suitcase because my flight's leaving in 3 hours' time. That's when I need to pack my suitcase. If I don't know when the flight's leaving, how will I know when to pack the suitcase? How can I be ready for something when I don't know when it's coming? And here, once again, we get to listen in to the answers. This is a piece of teaching where Jesus is talking just to his disciples. They've moved away from the crowd. They're walking out of Jerusalem back to Bethany. And he sat down on the Mount of Olives just with his disciples. And it's quite an intimate time. And Jesus, frankly, calls into question the entire existence of the Anglican community because he preaches a four-point sermon. Four. Now, we all know it should be three, but because it's Jesus, we'll forgive him. And actually, I'm devastated to say that later on there's points five and six. We just haven't read that far in the Bible this morning. But he actually gives us four, in total, six pictures to help us deal with this question, which means it's important, which means he wants to resonate with different people in different ways, which means he really cares that we understand some of this stuff. And he will have looked round the people listening to him And he will have thought, oh, you'll understand it this way. Maybe your cousin's about to get married and you're one of the people involved in all the preparations. Maybe you've got a friend who's the master of a household, and so you'll understand it through servants. And what we've got is this collection of pictures and stories, four of them that we're looking at this morning, to help us think about this question. And those four pictures are these. The first one is Noah and the flood. The second one is the picture of a thief who comes to steal from a house in the middle of the night. The third one is a story of the wise and the wicked servants. And the fourth one is the story of 10 virgins. And so very briefly, honestly very briefly, I want to just look at each of these, four of these pictures and work out what it might say to us in answer to these questions about whether we'll be ready for when Jesus returns at the end of time. So Noah. I don't know if anybody caught the BBC adaptation of the story of Noah that was on, I think it was around Easter time. It wasn't high budget, no Russell Crowe to be found here, but I quite liked the human side of the way that Noah was portrayed in that story, if you got to see it. It might still be on iPlayer, I'm not sure. But the thing that they really went to town on in this adaptation of the story of Noah, which I have to say isn't in Genesis 7, 8, 9 and 10, but I think it was probably, with poetic license, quite a realistic portrayal, is obviously if one of your neighbours has suddenly started building this massive boat, people do wonder why. It's not the obvious thing to do in the middle of the desert. And so they had this interaction of Noah going into the town and telling people God's going to send a flood. And they all look at this lovely blue sky without a cloud in it and no breeze of a wind and laugh at him. And he comes home again very frustrated. These are people he loves and cares about. And this goes on backwards and forwards. Noah going into town, telling them, come on, it's really important. I've given my whole life to building this ark because God has told me there's a flood coming. And they don't listen. And Jesus says, as he tells this story again to his disciples on the Mount of Olives, he says, as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be in the coming of the Son of Man. Verse 38, for in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage up to the day that Noah entered the ark. Jesus is not saying that eating and drinking and marrying and giving your sons and daughters in marriage are bad things to do. That is not what he is saying. But what he is saying is folks were so wrapped up in everyday life that they had forgotten to listen to the eternal whispers of heaven. They had lost their godly perspective on life because everyday life had completely and utterly absorbed them. And I don't know about you, but I think of that and I think, ouch. I think, actually, I'm not sure I'm not in that place quite a lot of the time with the school diary and my work diary and hope from time to time of researching and booking in holidays and of going on trips and spending lovely time with my children and memory making with our family. Everyday life is quite full on sometimes, isn't it? But there is a really important thing that Jesus is trying to say. Do everyday life, do it well. Invest yourself in your relationships. All of that is completely valid and important things to do, but do not do it at the expense of missing the eternal perspective, the whisper of God, the voice of Jesus. We need both to be able to be ready for Jesus to come again. How do we do that? Well, we're doing it right now. It's the things we do to put ourselves in the place where we will hear that voice. It's why we come to church. It's why we try to make a habit of reading scripture. That's one of the main ways that God reveals himself, reveals his plans, reveals his will to us. And if we don't read it, we won't hear that voice trying to woo us, to help us to be ready. It's why we regularly turn to prayer. It's why sometimes we might even drag ourselves out from EastEnders and go to the APCM on Tuesday evening at 8 o'clock. It's the point where we straddle the now and the not yet. It's a very important place we put ourselves intentionally so that the voice and the stuff of everyday life are not allowed to crowd out the eternal song of heaven. So that was the story of Noah. The next picture Jesus uses in this teaching is the story of a thief coming in the night. And this is verses 42 and 44, if you've got it in front. "Therefore, keep watch," he says, "because you do not know what day your Lord will come. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known at what time of night the thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would not have let his house be broken into. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him." We have to be careful here. Jesus is not a thief. He's not going to take away everything and leave us desolate. That's not the comparison we make. Hopefully you know that. But all we're saying is this is an unexpected visit. Now, to be clear, as Phil said last week, this isn't watchfulness in the sense that we need to be, as I was saying before, interpreting tiny clues or the fact that there'll be some doubt as to whether Jesus has arrived or not because it's going to be so dark that we won't be able to see whether it's him or not. It's not that either. We will know from everything that we read last week that when Jesus comes, we will know. We don't need to worry about that. And also, there's this biblical theme of watchfulness, but keep watch doesn't necessarily mean look for or anticipate immediately. So we don't need to be the person who sits on the edge of their chair all the time. Is it now? Is it now? Is it now? Now? Is this the moment now? I don't know if you've ever heard of that phrase. There are some people who are so heavenly minded that they're of no earthly use. There are some people who are so heavenly minded that they're of no earthly use. And I don't think that's anybody here. But what we're not called to be is so on the edge of our seats about the coming that we miss what's going on now. So it's kind of the opposite point. This is about balance, isn't it? We don't have to sit with our ears open and forget the families and the jobs and the diaries and all of that. So there's some balance. But the believer has to remain prepared for the Lord's coming. Look at this house here. I don't know if you can see the picture. But they have not taken any precautions, have they? They are not prepared for this eventuality. There's windows open, the garage door is open. They've even left the front door wide open. This is not a house that is on watch, just in case a thief comes in the night. Now, what they could have done was shut up all of the doors and windows and the garage door, and they could have gone to bed and gone to sleep. That would have been fine. We're not called never to sleep again. That's fine, thankfully. But what we are called to do is to take some precautions so that we are ready when Jesus comes back. In the ordination service, new priests are instructed. It's quite a big moment. The new priests are instructed to proclaim the word of the Lord and watch for the signs of God's new creation. They're to be messengers, watchmen, and stewards of the Lord. This idea of a night watchman is in the Bible in a few different places. It's having a system in place, having things in place that help us to be ready. And it's not just priests in the ordination service. We're all called to be watchmen, watchmen and watchwomen, looking for signs of what God is doing and joining in. Think, if you will, of a fire station. The firefighters don't sit down having their lunch in the fire station with an axe in one hand, wearing breathing apparatus and trying to get their BLT sandwich in through the breathing apparatus and their hard hat. That's not how it is. But very, very regularly, they check, don't they, that the breathing apparatus is there, it's in the right order so that it goes on very quickly, that all the equipment is on the truck and it's ready to go so that when the alarm sounds, there is a minimum of fuss for them to be able to get going and attend to the emergency. What's that for us? What needs to be in place now? What habits have we let slip? Is our breathing apparatus in good order? Is our prayer routine in good order? Have we sort of stopped going to our home group? It's not a guilt, this is not a guilt exercise at all, but for each one of us, there will be those things that perhaps just need a bit of a service, a little bit of maintenance, and perhaps some new resolve. The third picture, the wise and the wicked servants. I don't know if you remember back to the boom of the dot-com era, and one of the first websites to be up and running to a mass market was lastminute.com. It's still running today. The name is quite helpful for this talk, but it's not actually the point. I don't think it's there anymore, but at one time I had reason to be on the lastminute.com website quite a lot. I did some work for their company. And what they had in the top right-hand corner was this little tab, and it said, "Look busy, the boss is coming." And I think lots of people still use that on mugs and things now. "Look busy, the boss is coming." And the idea was that you were at work, surfing the internet for whatever you wanted from lastminute.com, your next holiday or some theatre tickets or whatever it was, and if your boss came in the room, you could just click on this top corner and suddenly a bar chart appeared on your screen. And you looked, for all of a sudden, so industrious and so top of the class with this bar chart that, of course, meant nothing to you at all, that you didn't get into trouble for surfing the internet at work. I think if Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives today, he would have used lastminute.com's website to give this example. This story of the stewards is a steward who has integrity. He knows that the boss is away, but he still does a good job. He's still reliable and dependable. He gives the people the food at the proper time, is what Jesus says. And the alternative is the servant who thinks, "Oh, the boss is away, I'll put my feet up, I'll get everybody else to do the work. But when I hear the rattle of hooves on the road of his carriage approaching, I will look like I'm really busy and doing a great job. I'll stick the bar chart up on my screen and he won't know any different." We are called to be people of integrity. This is a situation where packing the suitcase as the plane is on the runway is not good enough. I want to talk about God's grace and his love and his goodness all day long. But sometimes we just have to hear the difficult thing. We are not called to do it all at the last minute in the hope that it will all be well. This is something that we are not called to wing. Winging it in discipleship isn't really discipleship. We're called to be people of integrity. I need to tell you a story, though, because there is another side to this. A couple of years ago, I went to probably one of the most beautiful services I've ever been to. There are six of us there, and it was a baptism of a man called Dennis. And Dennis was 93, and he had come to faith the year or so before and had asked to be baptized. And I could feel myself welling up as Dennis, slightly shaky, but still a great, solid, wonderful man, such a lovely gentleman, bowed his head over the font and was baptized. It's never too late. And we are not people who need to judge those who have come to faith late and say, "Well, I've put in all these 20, 30 years of hard work for the kingdom of God and you've turned up at the last minute." I'm afraid we're called to welcome those people. But this is saying, if you have been in it for 20 or 30 years, please keep going. Please do discipleship well. Please invest yourselves. Let's invest ourselves. Be people of integrity, not people who put the bar chart up just as the boss is returning. Today, of course, is the London Marathon. All those people running the London Marathon have not rocked up to Blackheath and started the race without thinking about it. They've been training for months and months and months and months to be ready for today. I wonder if any of us need to revise our training program at all. And we come to the last picture, the picture of the 10 virgins and their lamps. Let's cover this very, very quickly. The ritual was that the bride was in one house, the groom was in another house, and the bridesmaids, virgins means bridesmaids, would wait at the bride's house. And then the groom would come to the bride's house, and then they would all have a big procession back to the groom's house. It was the most incredible privilege to be asked to be involved in one of those processions. You didn't mess this up. Things stopped for these kind of things. Legal proceedings stopped. Any sort of work or selling stopped, and people would come out on the street to see the procession of the bride and groom. This was a massive thing, a big deal in traditional Palestinian weddings. And the people who haven't taken oil with them, this is bold stuff to say, they have insulted the people who asked them to be involved. And that bit at the end of this story of the 10 virgins, where actually those people who have got the oil don't share it with the others, That's quite hard to hear, isn't it? We all want to share. We want to be good people. But what they know is if they share their oil, the whole procession will be spoilt. The whole thing will not work. And actually what they want to do is honour the bridegroom and make the procession good. And that's their priority at that stage. And so they choose not to share. And so as I come into land now, I just want to say to you, please make sure that you've got lots of oil with you. We are in this for the long haul. This is the clearest indication I think we have in the Bible that Jesus may not come back tomorrow. There's lots of expectation, certainly in the early church, that he would come back quite soon. But actually, I think as Jesus tells this parable to his disciples, he's saying, I might not be back for a while. I might be late, later than you thought I would be. But please be ready nonetheless. And so as we finish, just those four pictures. Are there challenges or encouragements we need to hear today? Wrapped up in everyday life, maybe. And just need to tune ourselves into that eternal song of heaven again. The servants. Am I hoping to wing it at the end? The wedding. And the lamp. Is my oil full? Or is there something I need to do about that? What we need to hear over all of this is God's eternal love and his hope for each one of us, his rooting for each one of us, his equipping, his preparing each one of us to meet with Jesus again at the end of time. That's something to be looked forward to, if slightly terrifying. Let's take these words as help and encouragement. Let's not feel guilty. But let's respond in whichever way we need to. Amen.